Back in week two, when the Kansas City Chiefs lost at home to the Denver Broncos in gut-wrenching fashion, I was pretty convinced that the AFC West was out of hand, out of the picture. Then after going 1-5, I was even more convinced, and then even as the Chiefs went on this long winning streak, I did not see the AFC West as an option for this Chiefs team. But after a loss from the Denver Broncos, the AFC West is back on the table for the Kansas City Chiefs, but I'm not sure that's in their best interest for the playoffs. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, on Twitter at JB Briscoe. We're going to talk about that issue. We're going to talk about the Pro Bowlers the Chiefs do have, should have had, and should not have had. And as we do every week, previewing and recapping games, recapping the victory over the Baltimore Ravens, previewing the game against the Cleveland Browns, and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to anyone listening to the show right now. At the end of December, I'm recording this at the very early morning of my 21st birthday on December 23rd. But if I get any predictions wrong, I can't blame it on anything. I'm completely sober and I'm just bad at this sometimes. Let's start the show not with a recap looking back of just another run-of-the-mill Chiefs victory, but let's look ahead to the playoffs, which is a crazy thing that's actually happening right now. If you look at how the current playoff picture lines up, New England and Cincinnati are the 1-2 seeds, Denver is the 3 seed, the Houston Texans are the 4, the Chiefs are the 5, and the Steelers are the 6, which means the Steelers would go to Denver and the Chiefs would go to Houston in the first round of the playoffs. I would take the Chiefs over Houston a million times in a row. Obviously, they started their season in Houston with a victory, and right now, Brandon Weeden might be the quarterback. TJ Yates got hurt. He's done for the year. And he was playing for an injured Brian Hoyer. Hoyer would probably be back by the playoffs, but right now, Brandon Weeden had to finish the game last week, and they still won, but I am not afraid. I'm not afraid of the Houston Texans with any of those people as their quarterback. But then, what if things shift a little bit? Go ahead and look at week 16 here. What if the Cincinnati Bengals, with quarterback A.J. McCarron, go into Denver and win against still ostensibly Brock Osweiler, and Peyton Manning is up in the air, but I think we can expect Osweiler for one more week. Either way, though, as of right now, like I said, early morning on December 23rd, we don't know. But if A.J. McCarron, because of Andy Dalton's thumb injury, if A.J. McCarron goes to Denver and the Bengals win, the Chiefs win out, which we have to expect, the Texans beat the Titans, the Steelers beat the Ravens, basically, if the favorites win and the Bengals beat the Broncos in Denver, the Chiefs are looking at Denver coming to Kansas City in the first round of the playoffs. I can only imagine how thrilled most Chiefs fans would be to see that game have a rematch. And you could count me among them. I think the Chiefs would smother the Denver Broncos at home. Not blow them out, but a victory that would not frighten me. I mean, oh boy. I think on some level we overreacted about the Chiefs pretty consistently. And I think right now people can look at the deficiencies. We should look at the deficiencies in the Chiefs game and say, this is a good team. This is not a great team. This is certainly not a flawless team. This is a flawed team. The Chiefs have done several things against bad teams these last handful of weeks. They have not performed well enough against teams that aren't that good. And don't tell me they're just doing enough to win, because we say all the time, you know, good teams blow bad teams out. Good teams keep bad teams bad. Obviously, the victory over the Ravens ended up with a great final score. But there have been places these last few weeks where bad teams have hung around a little too long, or at least started out looking a little too good. So please, don't hear me say that the Chiefs are a bunch of fakes because they started off slow against the Ravens. But the Ravens didn't have the talent to hang around for as long as they did. And then obviously the Chiefs ended up blowing them out at the end. Please don't yell at me for that. The Chiefs just have some flaws. That's the general point there. And every team has flaws, but teams like New England and Carolina have less of them. But all of that being said, would love to see Denver come to Kansas City. But if the Jets win at home against the Patriots, or if the Broncos lose the next week at home to the Chargers, which won't happen, the Jets are then taking that sixth playoff spot, and the Broncos are out of it. But then you start to look at where the Steelers line up in this. And through the ESPN prediction machine, I can't put together a situation where the Steelers end up coming to Kansas City. But there's been talk of it all over the place. So allow me to operate in a tiny bit of ignorance for this one sliver to create this hypothetical situation. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. You can tweet your response to me at JB Briscoe. Would you rather see the Chiefs play on the road against a Brian Hoyer or potentially Brandon Whedon Houston Texans team in Houston in the wild card round? Or would you prefer to see them at home against Denver or Pittsburgh or the Jets? Because I think, even though I don't think very highly of Denver right now, I think all three of those teams are better than Houston. And I personally, I would certainly rather them play in Houston than Pittsburgh at home. I would probably rather see the Chiefs play in Houston than against the Jets at home. The Jets and the Steelers have real upset potential, and I think the Steelers might have an argument to be favored in Arrowhead, even in a playoff atmosphere. The Steelers have a high ceiling on their team. If their defense plays well enough, or if the other offense cannot keep up, the Steelers will light up the scoreboard. We saw this happen against Denver and how much that game shifted. The Steelers' defense did not do enough in the first half, and then the Broncos didn't score again. And I think that's more damning of the Broncos' offense than praising the Steelers' defense, because the Steelers started off giving up 27 points in the first half. It was 27-13 at halftime, and the Steelers had the offensive firepower to come all the way back. Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball 55 times. I don't want to see the Steelers, preferably at all, certainly not in the first round, even in Arrowhead. I would rather go to Houston. But I think that's just an interesting hypothetical conversation to have. Would you rather be on the road in Houston or maybe on the road in Indianapolis? I think there's still a very, very outside shot of being on the road in Jacksonville, but don't operate with that at the front of your mind. Or would you rather just have the game in Arrowhead and worry about the opponent later? Personally, you obviously also, please don't hear me say that the Chiefs shouldn't be winning every game. They need to win these next two games, and don't worry about where the playoff game is going to be. We're talking about a playoff game. Just win. It's not that important. But I'd rather see them go to Houston than get stuck at home against Pittsburgh and maybe even against the Jets. Now let's talk about something even less consequential than playoff seeding. Let's talk about the Pro Bowl for just a hot minute here. The Kansas City Chiefs have 5 Pro Bowlers on the first player pool roster. There will be more players faded in and out because of injuries and the teams in the Super Bowl, etc. The 2016 Chiefs elected to the Pro Bowl first time around: Travis Kelce, Justin Houston, Tom Bahali, Marcus Peters, and Eric Berry. And then I'll go ahead and just right off the top, I guess, say the two snubs that I think are justified to talk about, although it's hard to talk about punters too seriously in the NFL for some reason. Dustin Colquitt certainly has a case to make, and Derek Johnson should be on the team. He's been one of the best linebackers in football. Yeah, in fact, Pro Football Focus tweeted that Derek Johnson trails only Luke Kuechly among inside linebacker grades coming off of a torn Achilles. He has 51 defensive stops on the year. He's been, and by that stat, the second best inside linebacker in football. Very hard to keep him off the roster, in my opinion. But he's an alternate, and he'll probably end up on a team eventually, one way or another. So the Chiefs, I would say, end up with 6 Pro Bowlers in total. But if you're going based off of numbers and you want to just have the Chiefs look good, you can't complain about these 5, because 2 of them shouldn't be on the team, in my opinion. And you can make an argument for even more than that. Also, the idea that Sean Smith should have been a Pro Bowler is just not true. I don't buy that at all. Let's start with Marcus Peters. This is the name that I was most excited about just because he's a rookie. He's had so many good big plays, but he's also been rather polarizing. In fact, there's a tweet from Pro Football Focus. Marcus Peters leads NFL corners in interceptions, 7, targets, 123, passes defended, 16, second in touchdowns allowed, 7, yards, 903, and receptions allowed, 66. I also heard elsewhere that he leads the league in interception return yards, which makes sense because he leads the league in leads corners in interceptions. I don't have a problem with him being a Pro Bowler. Ronald Darby, the rookie corner from the Bills, had just as good of a case, but those big play numbers and those big plays help Marcus Peters' case in a huge way. He also gives up big plays right now. And if we just want to look at Marcus Peters, I was going to talk about him after recapping the game, but we can talk about him now a little bit, I guess, instead. He is only going to get better. Ben Almquist at Citadel Chief tweeted after the game, "Peters' ability to shake off mistakes and step up is unprecedented, beyond just about anyone I've ever seen." BJ Kissel tweeted, "Chiefs rookie cornerback Marcus Peters now has 23 passes defended this season, which is just 3 shy of the franchise record, Brandon Carr, 25 in 2010. Peters will break that record. As much as giving up big plays at the corner position is unacceptable in the NFL because it will cost you games, I'm completely okay with where Marcus Peters is as a rookie right now. His ability to read the game, read the quarterback, read the receiver, and react instinctively is phenomenal. And his big play ability is something that's hard to find in the NFL. To be able to find consistent big play ability among corners is very difficult. Now, it's even more difficult to find a guy who can do that without also giving up big plays. But Marcus Peters, I don't think, plays as a huge risk-reward kind of guy. There are just plays where he gets beat, where he looks like a rookie. That's going to improve. He has incredible instinct and incredible big play ability. His consistency is going to improve. He's going to get better at the every down, lockdown kind of thing that he needs to do more often. He's being targeted constantly because he's a rookie. Other quarterbacks know that he's a rookie, and they don't want to target Sean Smith as much. Sean Smith might not be have as good of a career long term, but he's established. He's a veteran corner. Quarterbacks are going to pick on the rookie, even though he has big play potential. That big play potential is incredibly valuable, and I hope he never does anything to let that fade. And I think he will keep that. I think that will maintain at this high level while he also gets better at not allowing those big plays over his head or even allowing some of those shorter passes that he has a chance to make a run at. He needs to make a few smarter decisions and beyond that, get used to the NFL speed a little bit more. I mean, he already has, obviously, he leads the league in interceptions. But the consistent down-to-down covering the guy in front of you difficulties that he's had, be it stuff in front of him or stuff behind him, as those stats show, those difficulties are there. But the big plays are also there. I think those big plays are going to stay, and I think that inconsistency on every play is going to improve. Marcus Peters is going to be... This will not be Marcus Peters' only Pro Bowl. I believe that very strongly. Look at the other Pro Bowlers. Obviously, the best story there is Eric Berry. A year ago, he was diagnosed with cancer. I think he started chemo treatment about a little over a year ago. And now he is on the Pro Bowl team, and rightfully so. He also has had some flaws in his game this year, just from a purely football perspective, but he's the story of the year. He should be comeback player of the year. He's in the running for Walter Payton Man of the Year. Eric Berry on the Pro Bowl team. It's almost hard to talk about anymore because I feel like we talked about it so much, and so rightfully so, because it's such an incredible story. But Eric Berry being a Pro Bowler, I hope that gets the coverage it deserves nationally whenever the Pro Bowl comes around. Although I hope the Chiefs aren't playing in it. I hope the Chiefs are still an active team, because that would mean they're going to the Super Bowl. Tom Bahali might be the most deserving out of these guys, and also in some ways the biggest surprise. If you would have said before the year, hey, these are the guys who are going to be a Pro Bowl on the Pro Bowl team, I think I would have been most surprised about Tom Bahali, because we were talking about him being on his way out. He took less money to come back to the Chiefs this year. We thought maybe this would be D Ford's chance to climb over Tomba's spot. D Ford's gotten snaps in Justin Houston's stead. But Tom Bahali has played unbelievably well. He might be the MVP of this Chiefs team, at least defensively. I would argue that he is, even over Marcus Peters and his big playability. Because without Marcus Peters, the Chiefs have a deficiency in one spot. Without Tom Bahali, I think this Chiefs defense loses so much, especially without Justin Houston. Tomba's is playing as well as he has in years. He's playing like the younger Tom Bahali, where we're going, wow, this guy's going to be good for the next 5 years. And now we're 5 years down the road, and he's still playing like that. The veteran day off that they've given him in practice, paired with the need for him to be better with Justin Houston's absence, has been remarkable. Tom Bahali might be the most deserving Chief in the Pro Bowl. In fact, I think he is. Justin Houston, because of his injury, I would say should not be on this Pro Bowl roster, just because he hasn't been producing the last several weeks because he's been unable to be on the field. Even before that, he played very well, and in a way that I think he probably was actually getting underrated because he was doing things other than just rushing the passer. I think his pass defense has improved, and his run defense has improved, which is hard to say. Or if it hasn't improved, it's stayed very good and been underrated because of how good of a pass rusher he is. I don't feel passionately about him not being on the Pro Bowl roster. I think it's fine that his name carried him over being injured a few games, although several games that will now continue by recent reports into the end of the regular season and hopefully have him back for the playoffs. I'm not furious about it, but I certainly wouldn't have argued for him being a snub if he had missed it. And then more than anything, the one player whose name really surprised me here, Travis Kelce, the lone offensive player on the playoff roster. I kind of don't get it. He had a fast start. He's a pretty big name for the tight end position. But Delanie Walker and Gary Barnidge, the tight ends for the Titans and the Browns, both missed the Pro Bowl roster. You might be able to make an argument for some of them to be on the roster over a couple other of the other tight ends who did make the team. But it's Greg Olsen, Tyler Eifert, and Rob Gronkowski. Those guys are pretty cemented as the top three. But again, Walker and Barnidge both had a great, great case to make, and Travis Kelce really didn't. Kelce had a nice start. He has an outside shot still to get 1,000 yards, but he hasn't performed that well as of late. Obviously, we've talked about him being a head case or whatever, which I disagree with that as an argument even. But he shouldn't be a Pro Bowler this year. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm a big Travis Kelce fan. I've defended him against some of the, in my opinion, inane criticisms. But he hasn't had a Pro Bowl season. I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't know what to tell you other than I think Houston and Kelce both really stick out as guys who probably should not be on this team. And Derek Johnson and Dustin Colquitt are guys who should have made the roster. Jeremy Macklin's had a nice season, but there are receivers who have put up some gaudy numbers and on more high-powered offenses. Not mad about that. Not mad about Sean Smith. I don't like that argument at all. Dustin Colquitt should be a Pro Bowler, but I can't be that mad at it because people don't care about punters enough. You might be thinking, you talk about Patreon every single week on this show now since you've started it, and you would be right. I do talk about patreon.com/RTK because it's the place where you can throw a little bit of money to me to help support this show. Got this beautiful new microphone. It's paying for fuller hosting on iTunes through the one of the hosting sites that I use. Helps get the show to everybody, and we're very close to this month being, the month of December being a $100 month of pledges. You make a pledge on $5, $10, $20, or maybe more if you want to have it be the official sponsor of an episode or of a month. I'd be happy to talk about that. You can tweet me if you have any questions there at JB Briscoe. But you can help support the show, and that money goes to hopefully improving the show and for the playoffs. Whenever the playoffs are actually happening, assuming that it all goes according to plan, you can start to expect a twice-a-week show for as long as the playoffs last, because there's nothing more fun to talk about than the Chiefs being in the playoffs. But the people currently supporting the show right now, the most wonderfully and financially, $5 group, Josh Beadle and Ben Rahman, $10 group, Christine Roadlander at C. Roadlander, and Ty DeClaire at Ty DeClaire 44, and the $20 group, Don Beal at Don Beal 32, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Thank you all so much for supporting the show with some of your money, helping keep this show free for everybody else. You don't have to throw money in my direction, but if you do, I'm very, very appreciative. Nothing will change with the show if you don't. Hopefully, it continues to improve if you do. And as always, you can share the show on Twitter. You can get in contact with me at JB Briscoe or on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK Show. Supporting the show by spreading those pages is fantastic. Even just being involved with the show in conversations, I really enjoy. I'm always happy to get to share these shows with you guys because I know you're listening, and I know we have a community of people who care all over, not all over the country, but in different places all over the world, getting to talk about the Chiefs together. So as always, especially in this wonderful holiday season, I know we're past Thanksgiving, but I really appreciate not only the financial support and people sharing the show, but just being able to interact with you all and being able to talk about the Chiefs all over the world. All right, now let's talk about the game. Usually I feel like I end up starting shows with the game recaps. Today the show went a little differently. Let me know if you like that, dislike that, or didn't really have a strong opinion on it. But either way, we're now talking about the game. Kansas City Chiefs 34, Baltimore Ravens 14. The Chiefs are now 9-5 and end the season with a 5-3 road record. The Baltimore Ravens dropped to 4-10 and will be looking for a higher draft pick. The game didn't start off very smoothly for the Chiefs, but ultimately, obviously, the final score turned out very, very well. Let's look at a few of the highlights or lowlights to the game. Chiefs started off with a 7-0 run. I mean, there's one score. I don't know if a run is the right word. I might have been using the wrong word there. Again, I'm completely sober regardless of it being my 21st birthday. Good start for the Chiefs offense. Looked to stall out on 3rd and 11, but Alex Smith got a favorable late hit call as he was running out of bounds. And on 2nd and 8, it was a really splendid throw from Smith to Albert Wilson. Got the Chiefs to 3rd and 1. Jarkendrick West hit an incredibly well-blocked gap for a 38-yard touchdown. Well-blocked, well-read, great play by Jarkendrick West. That's the kind of play that makes him look like a running back who has, who is not just a one-year little flash in the pan because the league didn't understand him yet. But the kind of, that's the kind of thing, again, I've beaten the vision dead horse for weeks and weeks and weeks now. But that's the kind of blocking, the kind of read, and the kind of execution from a running back that makes you believe that he has a future in the league more long term than just this season. And I'm not sure that penalty on Smith should have been a penalty, just for the record. But 10 plays, 89 yards, and the Chiefs go up to a 7-0 lead. But then on the kickoff, the Ravens bring it back, 39 yards. Jimmy Clausen goes deep over Marcus Peters for 30 yards to Kamar Aiken. Then a one-yard pass at the fullback gave the Ravens a one-yard touchdown. It's all of a sudden at 7-7. The defense was terrible. And then the Chiefs did absolutely nothing on the next drive. Incomplete pass, delay of game, sack, short pass for nothing, punt. Just a really garbage offensive drive there to follow up a really bad defensive drive. And then right after that, the Chiefs get the lead right back. The Ravens have another good start all the way down to the Chiefs' 30 on just three plays. But Javoris Allen fumbles it on a run play. Tyvon Branch saw the ball on the ground before anybody else did. He vacuumed the ball up and took it for a 73-yard touchdown. That was a fantastic play. Fantastic play by Tyvon Branch. And then at the end of the next Ravens drive, still inside the 20, they tried a strange fake punt on 4th and 9, and Daniel Sorensen totally sniffed it out. Another great play from a safety, similar to that Tyvon Branch play, great awareness. And then the Chiefs only needed 24 yards for a touchdown when they had a chance to really exploit that mistake. And I think you probably hear me say quite frequently, the Chiefs, you know, forced a touchdown in the red zone, it could not finish the drive. Not a problem here for the Chiefs. It was Smith to Jeremy Maclin in the end zone for a 13-yard touchdown, 21-7. The Chiefs jump up by two touchdowns. At this point, the game starts to give some breathing room. But that play, that touchdown pass of Alex Smith, I admit I'm not walking into this with the stats that I usually like to have, but just kind of as a fan and with an eyeball test, it seemed almost out of character for Alex Smith as a touchdown pass, but also felt kind of normal. I'll try to explain. It seems like a majority of Alex Smith's touchdowns are run in by the receiver after the catch. So it's great to see him throw a dart, you know, about 5 yards deep into the end zone. And it looked like a pretty common NFL touchdown pass, which is a great thing to be bored of, I guess. But it looked like a pretty common touchdown pass, but not something necessarily common for Alex Smith. I mean, the throw is actually a hair behind Maclin and another hair back. It could have been broken up by the defender, but I'll take it. I'm not going to get picky about that at this point. But it's just good to see Alex Smith. It wasn't a deep shot. The ball traveled maybe 18 yards in the air, 13-yard touchdown, like I said, about 5 yards deep into the end zone. It wasn't a deep shot, but it was a shot into the end zone where he just found the open receiver and made the throw. A throw does not have to be deep to be a very good throw, an accurate throw, and the throw that needed to be made. In this case, Smith did exactly what he needed to there. Next Ravens possession, Clausen scrambled on 3rd and 10, but Derek Johnson shed a block and chased him down after a gain of 8. Great play there. Then the Chiefs went for a block on the punt and just screwed it all up, running into the kicker on Demetrius Harris, which gave the Ravens 5 yards and a first down. I've been mad at Demetrius Harris for various things this year. I was not mad at him there. He almost had the block. I just don't know why they were going for the block there. They're up 14 points. Just take the ball. But then on 2nd and 9, Ravens still have the ball. Clausen and Aiken make another great play just past the first down marker and just in front of Sean Smith. But ultimately, the Ravens moved backwards and then punted it back to the Chiefs. Maclin was on his way to making a nice play when the Chiefs had the ball again, but he fumbled it. It was recovered by Albert Wilson, really saving the Chiefs' skin on that one. And the Chiefs faced 3rd and 12. Smith did his second favorite thing that makes me want to freak out and yell at the TV and throw things, because he threw the ball 11 yards to Albert Wilson on the sideline right at the 50, where there was no chance that pass, after it left Alex Smith's hand, was going to go for a first down. 3rd and 12, he threw the ball 11 yards to Albert Wilson running off into the sideline. So the Chiefs punted. Those drive me insane. 3rd and 1, though, for the Ravens. The Chiefs get the ball right back. The Ravens ran horizontally on 3rd and 1. Dee Ford with a nice stop in the run game. The Ravens punted with no penalties, no fakes. It was a real punt from the Ravens, something we hadn't seen in a while. Then with the Chiefs having the ball again, Smith whips it to Jeremy Maclin downfield for 13. On 3rd and 7, Smith runs for the first down. The offense stalls, and Santos comes in with 54 seconds left and nails a 53-yarder by a couple of yards, tying a career high for him. 24-7 Chiefs, hopefully kind of giving some pause to any of the Cairo Santos freakouts that people were having because of some the extra point and some other special teams issues. Santos is a very, very good kicker. And then as time was expiring in the half, in fact, as time hit zeros, Jimmy Clausen heaved a Hail Mary to Kamar Aiken, who caught the ball at like the 5 or the 6 yard line and then just ran it into the end zone. That was an embarrassing play. I don't understand how you let that play happen. I think it was Eric Berry that seemed to go for the ball, and nobody stayed on the ground to make sure they were there to tackle Aiken were he to catch it, as he did. It was a terrible play. And right before that, Daniel Sorensen got an unnecessary roughness penalty whenever he dove into a sliding Jimmy Clausen, and that put the Ravens within range to try that, but it still just should not have happened. The ball did not even go into the end zone. It wasn't a Hail Mary into the end zone. It was a Hail Mary to the 6 yard line, and then nobody tackled him. You have 30 feet to tackle the guy, or to break up the pass, or to get enough pressure to where that throw doesn't happen. In a higher stakes situation, that thing happens and a season ends, because that's the kind of thing that changes games. But the Chiefs get to halftime. And then on 2nd and 8, Marcus Peters defended his 20th pass of the year, which became a Chiefs rookie record. As I mentioned earlier, he has a chance to break the Chiefs single-season record. In fact, I think he will. Clausen's scramble didn't get enough. Ravens punted it back to the Chiefs. And then the Chiefs went all dinky-dunky, like they were actually playing with a huge lead, which they were playing with a lead, but I hate that mentality, taking over too soon. They threw a screen on 3rd and 15. It was beautiful. It's my favorite thing. And the Chiefs punt it. Thankfully, though, the Chiefs' defense followed that up with a nice stand. On 2nd and 5, Tom Bahali reminded us all of the fact that he is getting younger, apparently, with age. He made an absurd tackle when Derek Johnson forced the back to try to leap over him. They still got a first down on the next play. But then a Ron Parker blitz gave the Chiefs their second sack of the game. The Ravens got another first down anyway. And then they had another one that was taken back for a quote-unquote roll-up block with the lineman rolling over the legs of Jay Howard. It seemed incidental, but he definitely rolled him up. Then on 3rd and 11, Clausen went deep over Marcus Peters but missed long. The Ravens punted back, and though the Ravens had nice rhythm for most of the drive, the Chiefs get the ball. And then Frankie Hammond caught the punt and then ran backwards and lost like 10 yards, and that is infuriating. And I really miss DeAnthony Thomas very, very much. Then the Chiefs lose the field position battle on that. They start within their own 10. On 3rd and 5, then Smith. This play also, I think, is worth taking another moment on. It's 3rd and 5, and Smith zips a perfect pass for 6 yards after going through several reads. I think he tucks and runs that with that football just a few weeks ago, even a few weeks into this winning streak. Alex Smith's tendency on 3rd and short or 3rd and medium, if those first couple of guys aren't there, those first couple, either the hot read, his first read, or even a second option, if you look at the Macklin and Travis Kelce and they're covered, I think for a long time, Alex Smith's tendency has been, all right, I'm going to tuck it and run and try to make something happen. He stuck in the pocket for quite a while, went through his reads, and then threw the ball 6 yards on 3rd and 5. Those are the kind of plays that they're never going to be on a highlight reel. They're never going to make the majority of Chiefs fans think differently about Alex Smith, but those are the kind of plays that should make you think differently about Alex Smith. He's done more in the big play department these last few weeks, and that's great because he needed to, and it's happening more. But plays like this, plays high leverage plays, you're in bad field position, it's 3rd and medium, go through your reads, stay in the pocket, know your pressure, if it's there or not, and then eventually find a guy 1 yard past the first down marker. When people talk about Alex Smith being a quote-unquote game manager, when they talk about him being conservative, about being captain checkdown, this is when it's totally okay to be conservative if you execute this way. Conservative is throwing the ball 6 yards on 3rd and 5. That's effective conservative. Throwing the ball 6 yards on 3rd and 15 is useless conservative. That's the differentiating factor in Alex Smith's game, I think, for the most part. The big plays, the big shots downfield need to continue to exist. But if he always... I'm totally okay with Alex Smith usually throwing the ball 1 or 2 yards past the first down marker, as long as he's not throwing 3 yards short of it most of the time. And then he'll also take his deep shots. So I think developments like that on Alex Smith, where he can trust his offensive line a little bit more. Still no Jeff Allen, by the way, in this game. Trusting his offensive line a little bit more, taking his time to go through the reads, those are so valuable to Alex Smith's game. Then the Chiefs ran it on 2nd and 12, which boggled my mind, and then threw a screen on 3rd and 10. Punted it, but the ball rolled inside the 20 because the return man fell over, so that was nice. But the Chiefs switch field position. At this point, the game feels to be pretty much in hand. Clausen goes at Marcus Peters again, though. Peters, he catches the ball, and then Peters swings him around and lets the receiver stay on his feet, which drives me insane. He runs a little farther. I don't know if Peters was going for the strip, if he was hoping to fling him out of bounds. Doesn't matter. It didn't work. That's the other kind of play that Marcus Peters will stop having. And if he doesn't, if he's still doing that 5 years from now, then that's a real problem. Ultimately, though, the Ravens stall again. Punt. The ball goes out of bounds at the 5. Fourth quarter comes. Chiefs drive a little bit. Smith makes an excellent mid-range pass to Macklin for a first down. And then the Chiefs stall out again. Rich Gannon says the phrase, quote, "I'm a little surprised with the play selection there." We all were. A draw on 3rd and 9 drives me insane. But Santos hits another one. 27-14, Chiefs. And the drive took up 8 minutes and 41 seconds, but I legitimately, like, zoned out in there somewhere. I stopped taking notes. I stopped paying close attention. I stopped caring. It was a boring drive that ate up almost 9 minutes, which is totally okay with me in a game where you're out by a couple of scores. Then the Ravens and Jimmy Clausen drove all the way to the 13-yard line, which made me a little bit nervous, but Marcus Peters did his Marcus Peters special and picked off Jimmy Clausen and took it back for the touchdown, totally ending the game, totally changing the dynamic of that fourth quarter. At that point, it was fully wrapped up, if it wasn't already. I mean, before it was still a two-possession game. But Peters makes a nice play and then takes it the whole way back, 34-14. And then after that, next possession, Clausen heaved the bad deep pass, and Peters happened to be the guy closest to the ball, makes the play on the ball again, another pick, so Peters gets his 6th and 7th interception of the year, which is more than the Chiefs had last season as a team. So the Chiefs win the game 34-14. Marcus Peters ends the game with 2 exclamation points. And the Chiefs, this stat from Arrowhead Pride, the Chiefs in the fourth quarter of the past 5 weeks have won 50-0 the last 5 weeks in the fourth quarter. Obviously averaging 10-0. That is a wonderful stat, even though, again, for the most part, these have been against relatively poor teams. If you look at the Chiefs' schedule as a whole and what you think about the team as a contender, the Chiefs have 2 victories over teams that will likely be playoff teams. They beat the Steelers with Landry Jones at quarterback, and they beat the Broncos with very injured Peyton Manning / Brock Osweiler. They've beaten playoff teams with backups. This does give me flashbacks to teams of Chiefs past where we've really bought in and then realized, oh, they were playing bad quarterbacks the whole time. I'm not in full-on pessimist mode. I think there are a lot of things this Chiefs team does very, very well and a lot of things that they need to improve on. I don't like that the slow starts. If you start off slowly against the Ravens or the Bills, starting slowly against the Bills isn't even doing it justice. That was a disaster that I still have trouble understanding how they shut out Sammy Watkins in the second half of that game. But slow starts against the Chargers or the Bills or the Ravens or this week against the Browns, you can overcome that. But even a slow start against a team like the Texans, I would feel pretty good about in the playoffs. But beyond that, you can't start slowly in New England. You can't start slowly on the road in Cincinnati, even if it's A.J. McCarron at quarterback. And then making big plays in the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, you can start to turn those tables a little bit. It's not, if you lose the first quarter, it's not a total death sentence, because the Chiefs, strangely enough, have the ability to overcome that, not only with big plays on offense, but even predominantly big plays on defense and special teams. It's not a death sentence, but you're digging yourself into a hole that is hard to get out of, especially against good playoff caliber teams. That's my biggest concern for the Chiefs right now going forward, is a slow start in a game where they cannot afford to start slowly. And then there's nothing wrong with just putting away a team early. Again, especially the Texans. In case you're a Chiefs fan and forgot what the last time the Chiefs were in the playoffs looked like, they seemed to put away the Colts and absolutely gagged it up in unbelievable fashion. If the Chiefs end up going to Houston or end up hosting the Broncos and they have a chance to go up 14-0 in the first quarter, or even a chance to just go up 10-0 and by halftime, it doesn't matter. You don't have to let the other team stick around. And that's what I was disappointed with from this Ravens game, if there's anything to be disappointed about. I mean, overall, it's a good win. They ultimately did put away a bad team. The defense looked very good. Justin Houston reportedly won't play again in the regular season, and that concerns me because I think they would be very well off to have him in the Raiders game. The Raiders are going to be ready to play in Week 17 against the Chiefs, even in Kansas City. And Johnny Manziel, which I'll talk about in a second, he can create some issues, but you'll hear that I'm not concerned about that game as a whole. Tom Bahali has been fantastic. Dee Ford got blown out of proportion going up against a terrible tackle against the Chargers. I love Marcus Peters. I'm thrilled to see what he does in his career as a Chief, but right now I think his big plays are making people a little bit blind to the mistakes that he makes. Same for Sean Smith. Although Sean Smith is not making big plays, he's doing a better job of shutting guys down consistently, but he makes mistakes. The secondary has some fantastic talent. Tyvon Branch's play was amazing. Eric Berry's played very well. I hope Hussein Abdullah is back soon because he might be the best safety in the secondary, which I'm sure some of you will disagree with, but I think I would argue that point right now. The defensive line has been fantastic. The run defense has been just remarkable to the point that we don't even talk about the other team's running game. And I don't talk about the other team's running game in these recaps because just nothing ever happens. Last year, the Chiefs were 28th in rushing yards per game allowed. This year, they're currently sitting at 7, under 100 yards per game. And frankly, it feels like it's been less than that. Through the magic of podcasting, I've now gone back and opened up box scores just through the Chiefs' winning streak. They allowed 147 yards in that first victory, second victory of the year, but first victory after dropping 5 in a row. They allowed 147 yards to the Steelers with Le'Veon Bell before he was injured. 121 yards on 17 carries with a 42-yard long, but no touchdowns on the ground in that game. And I'm guessing that 147 is probably going to be the highest total out of the streak. The Lions, 81 yards. Joik Bell led the team with 56 yards rushing. Not a chance. Denver Broncos, 69 yards rushing in that game, where they should have been running the ball more because Peyton Manning couldn't throw, obviously. Although they didn't have the ball that often. San Diego Chargers, 52 yards rushing. Melvin Gordon couldn't do anything on this defense. Buffalo Bills, 129 yards. LeSean McCoy ran for 70. The lead back ran for 70 yards. 46 of those yards were from Tyrod Taylor. The Raiders, Latavius Murray, only 86 yards. 99 yards total as a team. San Diego again, Melvin Gordon, 35 yards. As a team, 44. Then the Ravens, 93 yards. With only 35 from Terrence West, 30 from Jimmy Clausen, 18 from Javorius Allen. So the run defense is, I think, the strength of this defense, and we don't talk about it that much because it makes the other unit irrelevant. And if you look at what to expect from the other potential playoff teams, again, Houston, Indianapolis, focusing on Houston, Indianapolis, and maybe Denver, but especially Houston and Indy. If you're going to either of those places, neither of those teams have the strength running the ball to begin with. And I think that actually plays into the Chiefs' favor on some level because you can just match up your standard run defense with their standard run offense and feel great about it because you're going to win that matchup. Alfred Blue is not going to buck the trend of these last 8 weeks for the Chiefs' run defense, nor is Frank Gore, who has run pretty well, all things considered, for the Colts. He's not going to change that trend. So I think that's going to be a huge advantage for the Chiefs, no matter who they play. You could say that I would take the Chiefs run defense over any running offense in football right now, especially on the AFC side. You can make an argument that the Steelers and the Bengals would give the Chiefs a really heavy test, and I would agree with that. And maybe the Jets could too. But as far as Houston, Indy, and even Denver, I'm not afraid because the Chiefs' run defense has been so fantastic. A few stats left over from the Ravens game. Alex Smith, a very Alex Smithy line of 21 of 25, 171 yards and a touchdown. That fantastic pass to Jeremy Maclin. Charkendrick West gets 16 carries for 76 yards. Spencer Ware was active in this game but did not touch the ball because of his rib injury. Sounds like he'll be ready to play again this week. No reason to rush him back at all, though. Travis Kelce leads the team in receiving yards, 6 for 73 with a 29-yard long, and caught six receptions were on 7 targets. Jeremy Maclin, 7 for 50, and that touchdown. Albert Wilson, 4 for 27. No big numbers there because so much of it came on the defensive side of the ball. I will take that every single time. Big plays defensively are how you win championships in this league. Kansas City Chiefs will be hosting the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns are not very good. They're 3-11. They're on a 1-8 stretch right now. Everything should point to this being a Chiefs bloodbath victory. The ESPN.com has the matchup predictor at the Chiefs winning this game 87% of the time, even though there's no new news on Hussein Abdullah or D'Anthony Thomas, both still in the NFL's concussion protocol. D'Anthony Thomas has missed 4 games. Hussein Abdullah has missed the last 3. And no Justin Houston, in all likelihood. Spencer Ware should be back. And the Chiefs shorthanded are better than the Cleveland Browns are right now as a whole. You can look at some of the stats and try to find where the Browns have a chance. It'll be Johnny Manziel at quarterback. Josh McCown is done. 270 passing yards average per game for the Browns, but that's over several quarterbacks. And under 90 yards average rushing per game, as I talked about earlier. The Chiefs' run defense will keep Duke Johnson or Isaiah Crowell or anyone who wants to run the ball from being a factor in this game. We're going to see the return of Dwayne Bowe to Arrowhead. Maybe he'll be active again. There have been so many injuries for the Browns and their receiving core. Maybe we actually see Dwayne Bowe show up. The leading receiver for the Browns is Gary Barnage, the tight end who I mentioned earlier, who really has a case to make for being a Pro Bowler. He has 68 receptions, just under 1,000 yards, and 9 touchdowns on the year. He's 70 yards short of 1,000, but he will reach 1,000 yards this season. Joe Hayden is done for the season. It's a total draft pick mode for the Browns, and it has been maybe since week 3 when they lost to the Raiders. It's just Cleveland. I'm sorry if this is bad analysis, but this should not be close. And even trying to figure out how the Chiefs win this game most easily or what their best strategy is isn't all that fun, because I think the Chiefs could win this game in a variety of ways. The Browns are giving up an average of 135 yards per game on the ground, so I think we could see a big old game here from the West, hopefully the return of Spencer Ware, from the West-Ware duo. Maybe now Davis runs the ball a bunch in the fourth quarter when this game shouldn't be close anymore. It's at home, it's against a bad team. Manziel might make a couple of plays. It'd be nice to see Marcus Peters not allow any big plays in this game, but I'm sure there will be a couple of turnovers for the Chiefs to capitalize on. Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce should both have nice games here. Eric Berry has gotten better at covering the tight end, and the secondary is dealing with tight ends better, so I don't think Gary Barnage will have much of a game here at all, even though he's their best offensive weapon. And if you take away Crowell, Duke Johnson, and Barnage, The Browns are playing unbelievably hamstrung football at that point. Their number one receiver on ourlads.com's depth chart right now, their number one receivers are Travis Benjamin and Taylor Gabriel. I almost called him Gabriel Taylor because I've frankly never heard of him. Terrell Pryor will be fighting for playing time in this game, as will Dwayne Bowe. Brian Hartline is on IR with a broken collarbone. It's just there's not much in Cleveland. And because I think the Chiefs, it plays in the Chiefs' strengths to stop Barnage and the run game, Marcus Peters will probably get burned by Travis Benjamin one or two times, and we're all going to freak out and wonder why that keeps happening. But keeping him in check and making Terrell Pryor and Dwayne Bowe beat you on the arm of Johnny Manziel, I feel just fine about those chances. ESPN.com has the Chiefs as a 14-point favorite right now. This isn't typically my strategy in the NFL because teams find a way to end up on similar levels, but I'll take those points. On paper, this should be the Chiefs' biggest blowout of the year. They're not going to win in all likelihood by 35 points, which is the margin of victory against the Lions, but it should look that way. The Chiefs beat the Lions by 35, beat the Chargers by 30, then beat the Ravens this last week by 20. This should be a blowout, and this should never be close. If the Chiefs get off to a sluggish start here, it will be too many times that that has happened to the Chiefs. Looking at Chargers, Bills, Raiders, Chargers, Ravens, don't let that happen against the Browns here. Blow them out at home. I think they will. I think we see Chase Daniel in this game for the second straight week. Chiefs win. Oh, boy. Let's say 34 points again, but I'll say 34-10 by another little step over last week. The Browns should not be able to make this game even competitive. That's going to do it for this episode of Reffing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes or whatever you use to subscribe to podcasts and never miss an episode, and get the episodes as soon as they come out. Especially with the holiday schedules, everything gets a little jumbled up. And speaking of holiday schedules, I'm going to be on the road for quite a bit of Christmas break, so I don't know exactly what the podcast is going to look like, but I will be here. I will find a way to be here. And then for the playoffs, I'll be here twice. I'll be here twice a week and be here as often as possible. I am Joshua Briscoe on Twitter at JBBriscoe. You can get in touch with me there or at Facebook.com/RTK Show, Patreon.com/RTK to support the show. And please let me know what you think that this show could be doing better, what it does well, whatever you want to talk about. I am a pair of open ears. Let me know if you're as confident as I am that you're going to take care of business against Cleveland. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye, Santa!
But could you drop the bass?